went through every single one of the things that I've been working on with my life. Now, you said all that. I'm like, holy cow, what is this guy doing? Is he talking to me right now?
The Naturalistic Revolution is a game changer. Listen to us break it down on Wednesdays from 2 to 3.
I want to thank you so much. You've helped me so much.
WBAI New York at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. It's 11 a.m. on a Wednesday morning. Coming up next is Living for the City with Michael G. Haskins. Hello and welcome to Living for the City. Living for the City is a program focused on telling stories from communities in New York and beyond. We cover issues that don't get the attention they deserve, unfortunately, in the media. We're talking housing, the environment, social justice, and more. My name is Michael G. Haskins. I am the program host and executive producer. Jillian Jonas is the senior producer. We embrace the concept of Sankofa, loosely translated from the Twi language of Ghana as "It is not wrong to go back for that which you have forgotten." And on this day in peace and social justice history, September 10, 1897, 19 unarmed striking coal miners were killed and 36 more wounded in Latimer near Hazleton, Pennsylvania, for refusing to disperse by a posse organized by the Luzerne County Sheriff. The strikers, most of whom were shot in the back, were originally brought in as strike breakers, but later created their own union. In 1963, on this date, 20 black students entered public schools in Birmingham, Tuskegee, and Mobile, Alabama. The governor, George C. Wallace, had ordered Alabama state troopers to stop the federal court-ordered integration of Alabama's elementary and high schools. President John Kennedy responded by calling out the Alabama National Guard to protect the students and to see the order enforced. President Kennedy spoke that day at American University's commencement, saying, quote, "Peace need not be impractical, war not inevitable. There is not peace in many of our cities because there is not freedom." Close quote. And finally, on this day in peace and social justice history, September 10, 1996, Sheryl Crow's second album was banned from Walmart stores because the song she co-wrote with Tad Wadhams, "Love Is a Good Thing," opens with, "Watch out, sister. Watch out, brother. Watch our children while they kill each other with a gun they bought at Walmart discount stores." Well, good for you, Sheryl Crow. And that concludes this day in peace and social justice history on Living for the City, looking back in history to see where we have come from to help us understand how we exist in this moment right now and help us chart a course for the future. We'll be right back with our first guest coming up straight ahead. This is Living for the City on WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. I'm Michael G. Haskins. Today we're going to focus on something that affects nearly every New Yorker, whether we realize it or not, and that's the rapid expansion of 5G wireless infrastructure across our neighborhoods, a story that we've covered in the past. Now, while 5G promises faster speeds and greater connectivity, it also is raising serious questions about oversight, environmental impact, and especially the long-term health implications of living in close proximity to these new cell antennas and wireless installations that we're seeing across the city. That's where today's guest comes along. Joining us is Odette Wilkins, Executive Director of the New York City, that's the NYC Alliance for Safe Technology, a grassroots coalition advocating for responsible, transparent, and science-based deployment of wireless technology in New York City. The Alliance has been at the forefront of the push for smarter regulation, better community notification, and more thorough investigation into the risks associated with next-generation wireless systems. They've also been tracking federal and state legislation that could have major implications for how 5G gets rolled out across the country. And Odette, thank you so much for being here. Welcome back, as a matter of fact, to Living for the City.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Odette, let's start with the big picture, an overall look, if you will. What was the main purpose of the meeting last week? And tell us who was in attendance. Give us a snapshot of that.
Well, we have several meetings every week, which includes people from New York City, and it also includes organizations from across the country. I also am chair and general counsel of the National Call for Safe Technology, and we represent the interests of people who have been injured and disabled from wireless radiation and those who don't want to be injured or disabled from wireless radiation. So we cover a number of federal bills that are now being introduced in Congress that are very pro-telecom, and they want to deploy 5G all around the country without the ability of local governments or communities to say that they don't want this kind of wireless infrastructure outside of their windows. They're putting them outside of their windows, down the block. People are getting sick. And there have already been clusters around the country, including very prominently in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, where 17 residents, including children, became very sick after a cell tower was placed down the street. And it was so intense that the children were vomiting in their beds and people had to evacuate their homes. Those who could afford to evacuated. And these were their dream homes. It's in a rural area. And this was something that came as a big surprise to them. Mm-hmm. So there were some who had to stay behind, and one of those people contracted cancer and has since passed away. Mm. The big thing about this technology that people are not really focusing on, and the government isn't focusing on, is how children are adversely affected by wireless radiation. Because their skulls are still forming, their neurological systems are still forming, and their bodies have a lot of water content, the wireless radiation tends to have a greater effect, a greater negative effect. And children have been found with ADHD, leukemia. They've contracted leukemia, cancer. There was actually a cancer cluster of children in elementary school where a cell tower was placed on the school grounds. That's in Ripon, California. And after that was placed on the school grounds, four children, ages 6 to 11, contracted liver, kidney, and brain cancer.
Oh my.
And four teachers contracted breast cancer. Unfortunately, the child who contracted brain cancer has since passed away as of last year. That tower was then removed. And since the tower has removed, we have heard there has been no more reported cases of cancer. So what we were dealing with last week were all of the federal bills that are now going to take away all local control that would otherwise allow us to protect our children and to protect our communities from having these cell towers placed so close to us. And we don't have to have cell towers placed close to us. They can be placed many, many miles away. 4G LTE, you can have, has a reach of about 3 to 4 miles, and 4G has a reach of about 10 to 20 miles. So they can be placed very far away from people. The advent of 5G is really more about machine-to-machine communications. It really isn't about making a phone call.
I
It really
see.
isn't about streaming videos and all that. Or, of course, you can do them more quickly with 5G, but it is extremely powerful. And in order for it to operate, because the signals are so short, they only go about 500 or 1,000 feet for high band 5G. And therefore, the signal drops. And that's why they have to have it so close to people. But we don't need 5G. 5G is really more for industrial uses.
Odette, let me ask you a question. I mean, first of all, I'm stunned by what you've just said in the last couple of minutes. I mean, I'm not new to this, and many of our listeners are not. Even the program before me, Ecologic, has done stories about this over the years, but just hearing this and how communities in different places in the United States have been impacted in this way is quite chilling. I wanted to ask you, as we move on, were there any new findings, studies, or data that were shared during the meeting that build upon the Alliance's previous concerns about 5G safety, or was this part of the overall thrust of the meeting?
Well, you really touched on something very important. There have been studies since at least the 1970s that from the military, actually, that shows that these radio waves are very dangerous. There was a recent report that was issued by the World Health Organization, and it was just this year. And they showed a close association with cancer. So these wireless radiation, even though it's invisible, is still biologically active with respect to your cells. So your body is able to sense the wireless radiation, and even if you personally don't feel it at the moment, it's basically dose dependent. So if you are exposed to it 24/7, there is a cumulative effect.
Cumulative, yes.
And then it gets to a critical mass when your cells are so affected that you then become injured or you become disabled. And those are the and that's been happening all around the United States. And people are having to evacuate their homes, but now there's fewer and fewer places where people can go, because if 5G is going to be everywhere, there's not going to be any safe haven for people to go to, and you're not even going to be able to file a lawsuit against the telecom industry or against the FCC, because there is no legal recourse under the Telecommunications Act of 1996 to file a suit for personal injury. There is no legal recourse for personal injury so long as the telecom industry is operating within the FCC limits. But who is at the helm of the FCC? People who came out of the wireless industry. And they're going to go back to the wireless industry, probably. So we are, so the these rules are being promulgated by people who would ultimately benefit.
Have a true vested interest in this.
There's a conflict of interest here.
Yes. All right. I'm speaking with Odette Wilkins, the executive director of the New York City, the NYC Alliance for Safe Technology, which is a grassroots coalition advocating actually for all of us, really, for responsible, transparent, and science-based deployment of wireless technology in New York City. Odette, how are our communities currently being notified or not notified, actually, when these 5G antennas go up? And what changes is the Alliance pushing for on this particular front?
That's a very good question. And that actually was addressed at a New York City Council meeting of the Committee on Technology. And Council Member Lincoln Ressler was very concerned about, and in the hearing, was concerned about the fact that the stakeholders were not notified. And he was asking the Office of Technology and Innovation, that's responsible for the deployment of 5G towers in New York City, that, you know, how are they notifying people? And OTI's answer was that, well, they go to the community boards, and then they notify the community boards. And so that's really inadequate. And that's what Council Member Ressler indicated, that was really inadequate, that they need to notify the stakeholders, the people whose homes are going to be directly affected by having a 5G tower put right close to their homes or outside of their windows. So that is something that I know that he wants to change. He had indicated in the meeting that he was going to be introducing legislation to that effect. Now, he was very pointed in his comments to OTI, and he said the fact that the city has not been notifying all the stakeholders, not just the community board, but the stakeholders, was disgraceful. And he said that a number of times. He said, this is disgraceful. So we would like to see changes to how the 5G rollout is being put out. The rationale for the 5G tower rollout is to bridge the digital divide. And that is to make sure that people who are unserved or underserved get the service that they need.
Right.
So in community boards, the common question has been, why are you putting the cell tower here? We don't have a gap in service. There is no gap in service in this area. Why are you putting it here? And you know what the answer is?
What's that?
It's proprietary information. The telecom industry identifies the area where we're going to be putting, they want to have the cell tower, and everything else is proprietary. I'm sorry, if you're going to be using the public rights of way, public assets that belong to the city of New York and the residents of New York City, there should be full transparency. And if the rationale for putting 5G towers on our city streets is to bridge the digital divide, then you have to show that you're bridging the digital divide. If you're putting them in where people are saying there's no gap in service, then the entire argument and the entire justification for the 5G towers falls apart.
Well, Odette, there is a lot of information that I've been poring over in the last several days. There are different laws or proposals that have been put forward. Over the past couple of years, in fact, we have H.R. 3300, that's the 5G Upgrade Act of 2023. Now, that was introduced into the House in May of 23, and then going over to, I think, the Senate Bill 2787, the 5G Spectrum Authority Licensing Enforcement Act. Where are we with just these two bills here, or these proposals at this point? And then I want you to circle back and talk about 4G and 5G again. I really want you to outline the difference between the two and what is needed for you know, everyday New Yorkers, people to be able to have access to the internet, to the internet world?
Well, those are very good questions. Well, first of all, the bills that were introduced in 2023 are not in existence right now. Because whenever there's a new Congress that's elected, when we start a new Congress, all the bills that had not been passed in the previous Congress disappear.
Okay.
So you have to start from scratch. And so they...
So is that a good thing then?
That is a good thing, but Congress has been hard at work, and the telecom industry has been hard at work in introducing a lot of these bills under, you know, different bill numbers in different combinations and permutations. And the worst bill of all was H.R. 3557 in the last Congress, which basically took away all local control. And as you know, there have been 16 community boards in New York City, which represents over 2 million New Yorkers, that put forth resolutions for moratoria and outright disapprovals. In H.R. 3557 and in many of these other bills, what is being done is, with surgical precision, every single success that advocates around the country have had, and in New York City as well, have had to stop the proliferation of these the irresponsible placement of these 5G towers, has been eliminated in these bills. So H.R. 3557 had an explicit prohibition against moratoria, which would have cut and undercut all of the moratoria that we had done in New York City. Now, thankfully, that did not pass. But in this Congress, which is the 119th Congress, over 50 bills have been reintroduced, reintroduced certain concepts of the previous bills that had not yet been passed. So the overarching theme of a lot of these bills is to take away environmental review. And under the National Environmental Policy Act, environmental review encompasses reviewing the human environment, making sure that the human environment is safe. That is what they basically are going to be eliminating. And the FCC right now, the Federal Communications Commission, has just notified the public of a proposed rulemaking to get rid of environmental review. So that would really take away any protections we have in order to protect our human environment. Mm-hmm. When we actually talk to the legislators and we tell them, why are you doing this? They say, well, you know, if we've already evaluated the area for wireless technology, you know, we should be able to put more wireless technology in there. And so what we tell them is, you know, you have to look at the human environment, and the environmental review isn't, you know, just about the birds and the bees and the trees. Fundamentally, it is about protecting human beings. And the Federal Communications Commission has a responsibility to protect life and property. That is the purpose for which the FCC was created back in 1934 under the 1934 Communications Act. And the FCC has not complied, is not complying with the Communications Act or the reason for its existence. And it clearly states that it is for the purpose of protecting life and property through radio communications, not radio communications, and then leaving behind the protection of life and property. So right now, with the 5G towers that are being placed in New York City and elsewhere around the country, life is not being protected and property is not being protected, because as soon as you have a cell tower right next to you, people are not going to want to buy it. It devalues by about 20%, which is what has been reported, and people just don't want it outside of their windows. Also, there is the health impact. Now, it's not just being contracting cancer, which is what the World Health Organization brought up in its recent report. It's all about oxidative stress, neurological disorders, cardiac disorders. People have been getting tachycardia, heart arrhythmias. They've been going into AFib. There is a town in Idaho where after the 5G towers were installed, there has now been a cluster of people with atrial fibrillation in that town. And now there's a waiting list for AFib surgery. So there is a chronic disease epidemic there. And so that's, so the bills are also trying to accelerate the number of wireless antennas that that telecom can put on their poles. There is a there was a bill in 2012, the Spectrum Act, which in section 6409 had one sentence, and it basically stated that if you already have an existing structure with wireless antennas, you can add on as many antennas as you want on those poles. So once we get these 5G towers in, guess what? They don't have to go through the city anymore. They can just put on more and more wireless antennas right outside your window.
Well, that, I mean, that is worth the price of admission in and of itself, hearing that, Odette Wilkins. Thank you so much for that. And I understand from some of the reading that I've been doing, some of these cell phone, these cell towers, they are electrical installations, have caused fires as well. I want you to, if you would, in the last couple of minutes that we have, 2 or 3 minutes that we have, Odette, to talk a little bit about that, explain that for listeners. And I definitely want some further information from you, how people can get in contact with you to find out more, because I'm sure there are people who are hearing some of this information for the first time as you've walked across the country talking about some of these health serious concerns in different places in the country. So would you address those two things, and as we're getting ready to say goodbye to you?
Okay, absolutely. And first of all, you had asked me about the difference between 4G and 5G.
Yeah, please. Mm-hmm.
And so 4G is great. 4G LTE is, you already have all the capability, the phone capability and the capability to download films very quickly. You don't really need 5G. 5G is a software-based system. It is not hardware-based, so you gain access to 5G, and you gain access to one node of 5G. You gain access to the entire system. So 5G, in order for 5G to operate, you need to have thousands upon millions of nodes all over. So that increases the area for hackers to come into the system. And that actually happened in a Nevada casino a number of years ago when they had IoT, because 5G is all about the Internet of Things, how there's machine-to-machine communication. And there was a hacker that went into the thermostat of this fish tank, went into the thermostat and got into the high roller database for this Nevada casino, extracted the information, and then put it up in the cloud. 5G is not very secure. And Tom Wheeler, who is the former FCC chair, said that 5G is the least secure of any of its predecessors, 2G, 3G, or 4G, or 5G. Now, the other thing to know about 5G is that it incorporates also 3G and 4G. So many people are complaining that 5G, they're not getting the speed of 5G. It's going back to 3G or 4G. And that's what happens. It downgrades when the signal isn't there. Now, in terms of fire, 5G runs very hot. The industry knows that it runs very hot because it does a lot of analog to digital conversions. So there have already been fires, wildfires in California, the worst of which was in 2018, and it destroyed about, I believe it was 100,000 acres, about 300,000 people had to be evacuated. There were 3 deaths, and it was because of a faulty lashing wire on a telecom on a cell tower. Also, there was a fire on a Brooklyn apartment building that had rooftop antennas. So that becomes a hazard. And also the fact that these towers, these 5G towers, are being put so close to people, if there's any structural failure, they can crash into somebody's window, they can crash on the street. There's no fall zone. There should be a fall zone. If it's 32 feet, if these 5G towers are 32 feet high, there should be a fall zone of at least 32 feet around it. So mm-hmm. there would be mm-hmm. nothing around it. And now, in terms of contacting us, yes, we need people to contact us. If you want to get in touch with your federal legislators, we are here to, we have a lobbyist who we work with, and we're happy to accompany you. And so you can contact us at hello@thenationalcall.org. hello@thenationalcall.org. You can also call me. You can also email me at action@wiredbroadband.org. That's action@wired broadband.org.
Odette Wilkins, incredible amount of information. I thank you so much, and I was very excited to welcome you back to Living for the City. You are most welcome at any time on this radio station. I really do appreciate it. Thank you so much, Odette.
Thank you so much.
That was Odette Wilkins, Executive Director of the NYC Alliance for Safe Technology, which is a grassroots coalition advocating for responsible, transparent, and science-based deployment of wireless technology in New York City. This is Living for the City. I'm Michael G. Haskins, the host of this program. I just started to say your radio host and guide. That is my day job here at WBAI, and I'm very proud to have been in this chair since the mid-1990s. Oh my goodness, I can't even believe that. But I'm delighted to be here with you today. Let me just let you know before I welcome my next guest to the program. Tomorrow, September 11th, 9/11, from 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m., from 2 to 3:30 p.m., Senator Liz Krueger's virtual older adult roundtable series, The Impact of Federal Funding Cuts on Older Adults. And session one is titled, We Can Fight Back, Learn How to Advocate for What We Need. And that's going to be tomorrow, the 11th of September at 2 p.m., from 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Where's that addressed? Where can you get more information? Well, you can find out more from Senator Liz Krueger's page. I think you could, they want you to RSVP, and so I'm not going to give you the URL. It's long, and you're not going to get it all. So just go to Senator Liz Krueger and find out more information about that. And I'll tell you before we get out of here about the centennial of Malcolm X and its continuation. That's right, the Malcolm X Commemoration Committee. And Community Movement Builders, the Newark chapter, will co-host a book signing for London-based Black radical scholar Kehinde Andrews and of the Harambee Organization of African Unity. I'll tell you more about that, because we're going to be talking about his new book on Malcolm X, Nobody Can Give You Your Freedom. So we'll talk about that before we get out of here. but we want to welcome our next guest, and it's coming right up on Living for the City. Hey, don't forget, did I neglect to mention that we're commercially free and listener sponsored? Well, let me make sure to do that. And our pledge line is open always for you to make a contribution in support of WBAI, the program that I did last week, where I talked about, it was the day my father died in 2009, and shared some of the stories with you that he shared with me. And then we talked about the 369th Harlem Hellfighters and the event in Washington, D.C. And I'm just so very delighted to have been able to do that. The Harlem Hellfighters, the story is really quite extraordinary, but we'll circle back to that at the end of the program. We'll be right back. When we think about construction pollution, we often picture concrete dust, diesel fumes, or littered debris, but there's a quieter, more insidious threat that's entering our air, our water, and even our bodies, and that's microplastics. On construction sites across New Jersey, plastic products like PVC piping, vinyl siding, and manufactured lumber. Let me repeat that. Manufactured lumber such as Trex or Azek are routinely cut and sanded, sending microplastic particles into the air. Regulations exist that keep job sites clean, but the reality is really, it often is out of sight, out of mind. Today, we're turning our focus to this underreported issue, microplastic contamination from construction dust. We're going to be speaking with Brian Thompson, who's a retired reporter for NBCNY and now on the National Advisory Board for Beyond Plastics, as well as an environmental commissioner in the Jersey Shore town of Monmouth Beach, that's down the shore. He's joining us today to tell us how a growing number of New Jersey towns are stepping forward, stepping up to say, that's enough, basta ya, no more. These communities are pushing for greater accountability, smarter building practices, and a cleaner, healthier future for all. Brian Thompson, good day to you, and thank you for being on Living for the City.
Thank you so much, Michael. It is my honor to be on your show, I have to admit. And man, from the mid-90s, I first started working for Channel 4 in 96. I retired. You know, it's not a bad gig.
You retired, and I'm being pressed to do likewise. So we're around that same in that same area. Listen, so tell us a little bit about, give us some background about this, about the microplastics, talking about in this way, and then we'll talk some specifics about what's going on in terms of some of the towns down the shore, you know, trying to abate this somewhat.
Well, when you think about it, you know, we've all heard about these microplastics in our brain and in our heart, in our blood, in our, I suppose this is a family show, Michael. I mean, yes. Let me just say that microplastics have been found in women's placentas, in their breast milk. And for men, how do I put this? Just look down south at yourself. And they're in there, okay? And increasingly, the science is pointing at these little teeny invisible particles of plastic that have broken down as being a possible cause for a nearly 50% drop in sperm count in men over the past few decades. Wow. Think of that, 50% less sperm. Mm-hmm. And the production of plastic in the last 20 years or so, we produced more plastic than in all the years before that. Jeez. Plastics actually kind of go back to the 1800s, but commercially, mm-hmm. they came out of World War II, really, for the most part. And, you know, better living through chemistry. Some of your viewers may have seen Dustin Hoffman in The Graduate.
Hey, that comes right to mind, immediately comes to mind. Go ahead, Brian.
There you go.
Yeah.
But what the industry never did, and this is going to shock you, Michael, I know, and your audience, they'll never, ever believe this. Trust me. Industry didn't look to see if there was anything harmful from the product that they made. Now, can you believe that? That industry wouldn't do that? That industry wouldn't think, hey, maybe we should check out first if there's any danger to what we're making, to any baby cribs that might cause sudden death syndrome or something like that. Mm-hmm. I know that we all think that industry is very progressive at this, but sometimes things slip through. This slipped through. Plastics are not a stable item. They look stable. Mm-hmm. You hold that bottle of water, that plastic bottle of water, it looks stable. Yeah. But it was Columbia and Rutgers researchers who just a year and a half ago found that in a 1 liter bottle, that's a big bottle of plastic water, there are 240,000 nanoplastics floating around. Nano is actually the smallest size of a micro. That's what you really need a super microscope for, a spectrography or something like that. Think about it. Think about it. In water, 240,000 little teeny fragments of plastic floating. I hope you're not, that you don't have a plastic water bottle in front of you, Michael. I hope it's refillable, reusable.
It's not in front of me, but it's on the other side of me. It's shaming me as we speak, but go ahead, Brian.
That's my idea. Yep. Try to shame you.
Yep.
Or at least try to make
educate
you think you're ingesting this into your body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of it will flush out,
mm-hmm.
but not all of it.
Not all of it.
Because those nanoplastics are so small, they'll go right through the wall of your stomach and into your blood, or you'll breathe them. Are you breathing right now, Michael?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You are? Okay. Yes. Then you are inhaling microplastics right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Go out, step out on the street, step into an elevator, go home, go into your home, close the door. You're still ingesting or breathing, I should say, nanoplastics.
And so what you're saying, Brian, is over 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, over a lifetime, that's a lot of ingesting.
Yeah.
Microplastics.
For somebody our age,
yep.
It is estimated that there is probably the equivalent weight of a plastic spoon just in our brain. Think about that. Take a plastic spoon. Do you have a plastic spoon nearby?
Not readily available, but
I bet there's one around the corner at the self-service bar at the radio station, right?
Correct.
Yeah, that's in your brain.
Yeah,
that's in your brain. You get those takeout utensils now. New York, God bless New York City. I mean, you guys banned automatically dumping plastic utensils into takeout food just a couple of years ago.
Yes.
We're trying to do the same thing statewide in New Jersey. You haven't done it statewide yet in New York State. It's just for the city.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things add up. They all add up. That's why you have that plastic spoon in your brain. It's floating around in the membranes and the gray matter and the blood and God knows every little crevice that it can find. And there are these nanoplastics just piling up day after day after day, because they're so small, they can penetrate into the blood wall, into the blood, red blood cells, and those red blood cells go all through your body. This is what we're dealing with. And, you know, I hesitate to say it only because I don't want to get into a liability situation, but there are a lot of health crises out there. Asbestos comes to mind.
Yes.
That we didn't recognize it turned out to be something big. We don't know that yet for sure. And let me make that very clear. The research is still too young. But we do know there is a lot of cause or association, I should say, between an overdose of plastic particles in your body and things like dementia, heart disease, lower sperm count. And they do know this. It's in breast milk. And when a baby feeds on breast milk, it's ingesting those plastic particles. It is in women's placentas who are pregnant. And we do know that as soon as that baby finishes using up the yolk, I think it's around 10 weeks or so, the embryo, and starts feeding off of the placenta, it's getting plastic particles into that fetus.
Oh, that's quite extraordinary. Brian Thompson is my guest here on Living for the City. Brian is a retired reporter for NBC and Y, and now he's on the National Advisory Board for Beyond Plastics, as well as an environmental commissioner in the Jersey Shore town of Monmouth Beach. And Brian is talking with us today. He's here to talk about microplastics and the growing number of Jersey towns that are saying no more about these microplastics, particularly in regards to being on construction sites. Now, talk to us about that. What have the findings been on these microplastics? I mean, some of the businesses, the construction businesses, have taken steps to minimize that. But so what have you seen in your work?
Well, let's put it this way. This all started with a retired chemical engineer down in Margate, which is right below Atlantic City. And imagine stepping out of your house and looking at your front yard and realizing there's about 2 inches of snow on your front yard, down the shore, which doesn't get that much snow. And then you look at your neighbor's house, and it's a green lawn or a stone lawn. And across the street, there's no snow. And you wonder, what the heck? And you bend down, and you start feeling it, and you realize your yard is encased in about 2 inches, 1 to 2 inches of plastic sawdust, because next door, a house is being built with plastic vinyl and with plastic manufactured wood like Trex or AZEK and PVC piping, and they have to cut those pipes, and they're using an outdoor table saw with no containment vehicle on it, for example, a vacuum or a hood, or doing it in a tent so that it doesn't blow away onto this woman's lawn. Her name is Sherry Lillianfield, by the way. She took it to her green team in Margate. They started investigating. They took it to their council, and they almost passed the first ordinance in the nation that told contractors, you have to contain this dust when you're table sawing outside. Now, if you do it inside the house, that's fine, because it's going to stay in the house until you get a vacuum and you clean it all up. You know, one of those big industrial vacuums that you buy at Home Depot or Lowe's. But outside, in a yard, that's why she had snow in her yard. Ersatz snow, fake snow, plastic particles. And this is what we call instant microplastics. And this is what they almost passed in Margate, and then they pulled back a little bit and said, why don't we just make it a recommendation, a resolution? I saw it online, and I said, wait a minute. We need that in my town of Monmouth Beach. We have a lot of construction, you know, post-Sandy and all that stuff. And so I took it to my environmental commission, and they all agreed. And I talked to my mayor and one of our council members, and they said, sounds good. And we had, they had our borough attorney draw it up. partly based on what Margate did and partly through his own creativity. And presto, last June, we passed, as best I could tell, the first law in the nation, an ordinance, the first law in the nation that mandated certain practices when you're table sawing or using any kind of saw outside at a construction site. And that is, put a hood over it, use a vacuum, one of the two or both, put a tarp underneath to catch the droppings, and if practical, put a tent or some sort of enclosure, or do it in a half-built garage area or something like that as a house is still going up, and then clean it up every day. Duh. You know, Michael, you think about it. You go to any construction site, and I believe this is true in New York City as well, the contractor has to have like a dumpster there, right? For those extra pieces,
yes,
of 2x4.
100%, yeah.
Or sheetrock or whatever trash. He can't throw them in the street, can he? You can't go down 10th Avenue and see some contractor building a high-rise apartment building just dumping extra 2x4s or extra sheetrock, mm-hmm, right on 10th Avenue or on Queens Boulevard or anything like that. That's illegal in New York. And you're going to get your tail fined so quickly that you can't see straight. Well, that's also true in New Jersey. You can't do that. So why can they be allowed, and they can't, to create this invisible or barely visible dust, sawdust, that never breaks down? Do you know, Michael, every piece of plastic ever made still exists somewhere. Somewhere. It does not biodegrade. It doesn't break down into, you know, whatever wood would break down into, for example. You know, it doesn't do that. It's a chemical. It's a chemical mixture. Remember The Graduate. Remember Dustin Hoffman.
That's right.
Yeah, that's the future, baby.
Yeah.
Except that's our present right now. It's our present.
Except it's what's happening to us right now. In the final couple of minutes and in talking to you, I wish that I had another half an hour to talk to you, but maybe we'll circle back to this because it is an issue. These microplastics, certainly, as I'm feeling rather foolish for having this water bottle next to me here.
Good.
We'll put that aside for the moment. Let's talk about solutions, not pollutions, because we know about the pollutions. The solutions and policy shifts, if you can share that with us in the last 2 minutes, particularly in these towns in New Jersey, yours being one of them, Margate and others. Share that with us and then give us some contact information for us, Brian.
Michael, I'm not sure how much breaking news you get on this show, but I can give your audience right now some breaking news.
Please do.
Just this afternoon, mm-hmm, I got an email from the mayor of Elizabeth, whom I know very well, in Union County, right next to Newark, the fourth largest city in New Jersey, 135,000 people. Last night, his council passed the first reading of this ordinance that we have pushed in New Jersey, and they will give final approval 2 weeks from now. It will be the largest city in New Jersey to have passed this dust control, sawdust control law. What we did after my town passed it, some Jersey Shore towns passed it, Surf Rider, Clean Water Act, all bunch of groups got together, we're working together, we keep adding new environmental groups every month or so. We're now passing this ordinance in local communities at the rate of more than one a month. And the goal is, and we can end on this if you want, the mm-hmm goal is to get a statewide law, the first in the nation, that would require this practice at construction sites. They already have to keep a clean site, but it's out of sight, out of mind. This would indeed put some teeth into that law that code officials could then use. And if they see an open table saw at a construction site, they can go right up to him and say, don't you dare cut a piece of plastic on that table saw until you put a hood on it or a vacuum and a tarp underneath, and make sure you clean it up at the end of the day and don't let the dust blow away.
Brian Thompson, that's what we're doing. Thank you so very much. And yes, I have to tell you, we do break some news here on this radio station right regularly. Let me tell you that. But good. Thank you so much for being on the program today, sharing this information with us. And it seems like we'll have you back. I have an idea for a follow-up with you. Brian, thank you so much for being on Living for the City.
You bet.
All right. So that's Brian Thompson. Brian Thompson, a retired reporter for NBC NY, now on the National Advisory Board for Beyond Plastics. He's also an environmental commissioner in the Jersey town, the Jersey Shore town of Monmouth Beach. That's Monmouth Beach in New Jersey, down the shore. And we appreciate him being here and appreciate you as well on Living for the City. Yes, we are. We are a family. I had to get Sheryl Crow in there. Part of our Sankofa moment. And you can't stop us now because of how you feel. It's more than you. It is more than me. Whatever dreams we have, they're for the family. Trying to fit everything into the program today. Guinea-Bissau gained independence from Portuguese colonial rule in 1974, culminating in Portugal's recognition of the nation's sovereignty on September 10th, 1974. And we close the program every week with remember to surround yourself with people who respect and treat you well and never regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. There's a fountain like a giant tree of hope, growing wiser. Living water for each of us. Rivers of dreams flowing through the heartache of this place. There are children that flower the trees.
In the days after the 9/11 attack, the US EPA said the air was safe to breathe. And 24 years later, more people have died because of that lie than folks that died on the day of the attack. Tune in Thursday, September 11th at 9 a.m. for a two-hour WBAI Pacifica public affairs special as we remember the dead and resolve to help the living that need our support to keep on living. That's September 11th from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. We remember.
This is Stephanie Wells, Executive Director of Pacifica Foundation. Congress has defunded public media, threatening the survival of television and radio stations that provide trusted news, emergency alerts, and vital community connection. Years of corporate media consolidation.